Hello and welcome to the Squawker Talker Euro 2020 Group E Preview Podcast. We're kicking off with Spain, European champions in 2008 and 2012, but it's been a slim few years for La Roja since then. We're joined by La Liga journalist Alan Feely to preview Spain and look ahead to Luis Enrique's plans for the tournament. Luis Enrique, Alan, is probably the big story other than his players. He's back in business in terms of being Spain boss. There was a brief hiatus when his assistant, Robert Moreno, took over. Enrique then came back into the top job following the tragic death of his young daughter. But he's very much back in the driving seat in terms of Spain boss. And from a wider picture, people look at this and remember him from his time at Barcelona when he won the treble and he was massively successful. But working in La Liga and within Spanish football, you'll know that he's quite an enigmatic character and he's quite a straight talker. He'll back himself, whatever decisions he makes in terms of starting lineup or the way that Spain want to play, Enrique answers to no one.
Yeah, I think he's very clever in building relationships. I think he had problems with Lionel Messi when he was coach of Barcelona and he managed to overcome them. And I think that, you know, in the Spanish setup, his relationship with Sergio Ramos is very important. I think he managed to win the kind of trust of the senior players through that relationship. And I mean, he's from the Asturias, like Marcelino, another kind of very kind of, you know, almost austere, kind of straight-laced, very direct and self-confident individual. And I think that, you know, as a coach, I like him very much. I like the football he plays. I like the control he kind of holds over his team. And I mean, yeah, that issue with Robert Moreno was very, very much kind of a sideshow in the build-up to this competition. I guess it's difficult to know what fully went on because you weren't in the rooms where these conversations were happening and what kind of things were done behind the scenes in terms of people for angling for jobs and that kind of thing. But what we do know is that Enrique didn't take kindly to it when he came back into the setup after that hiatus you mentioned, and he kind of acted very quickly and swiftly to resolve it. So I think that, you know, talk of a hangover or, you know, residing issues or residual issues in the camp from that experience is overblown. I think that Luis Enrique is a kind of operator who wouldn't let that kind of thing happen. I think he'd deal with the situation and move on very swiftly. I think his players would too. And also the fact that he used so many players during the qualification process and for the Nations League as well, I think that kind of hints at his lack of fear to experiment and try new people. So I think there's no sacred cows in that squad, I think, to use the term that's been bandied about in Spain a lot in these past few days. I think he's very much the leader of this team. I think he's in charge and there's no doubt about that.
In terms of selection, we'll get to that in just a second, but Enrique is exactly the type of boss. He likes a challenge and he likes to prove that he hasn't lost any sort of his edge. And one of the claims when Moreno was fairly unceremoniously removed from his position was, this is the manager that has got Spain to Euro 2020. Obviously, the tournament being delayed 12 months has given Enrique more of a chance to get back in the groove with the Spain team, but his record has been equally brilliant. So there can't really be too many arguments about him coming back. From 10 games, there's just one defeat. Excellent in the Nations League. And then again, the start to World Cup qualifying, they've been brilliant. And nestled in with all of this has been a 6-0 battering of Germany in their last game back in 2020. So Enrique, as you say, is firmly back in charge. And there's no real doubt about the fact that he means business in this tournament. Mentioned there, obviously going back to the golden era, 2008 to 2012. It's been slim pickings since then. Two round of 16 exits and a group stage exit from the World Cup and the European Championships. But you do get the vibe from Enrique that he's up for this.
Definitely. I think that there's an energy with the Spain team that wasn't there in the previous two tournaments. I think that it's almost like we're seeing in Madrid and Barcelona at the moment, where you have one generation who is so successful and so talented. And when they come to an end and when their cycle kind of expires, it's difficult to bring in new blood. I think in Spain's case, you had the likes of, you know, Iker Casillas, you know, Carlos Puyol, Gerard Piqué, you know, Fernando Torres, these kind of, you know, and obviously, of course, Xavi and Iniesta, these kind of seminal figures. And I think the likes of Isco, David De Gea, Thiago Alcantara, who were expected to kind of fill their boots, haven't done so for one reason or another. But now there's a younger generation coming through that I'm sure we'll talk about later, that are bringing that kind of vitality and that kind of freshness, the likes of Pedri, the likes of, you know, even Marcus Llorente is kind of coming in from the cold in many ways. And I think that they do add something to the team that was missing. And I think that Luis Enrique is the man who can harness that energy and put in a competitive showing. This isn't the same Spanish team that, you know, failed quite miserably in 2018 or 2014 or 2016. it's very much a different beast, in my opinion. And I think that we'll see that this summer.
In terms of the selections, Luis Enrique does have a few decisions to make, but based on the World Cup qualifiers, he seems to be fairly set in some key positions. And one of them is in goal. David De Gea, Kepa Arrizabalaga at Chelsea. David De Gea's not had the greatest of season. Dean Henderson has usurped him as number one at Old Trafford, and Kepa has found himself in a similar situation with Edouard Mendy at Stamford Bridge. So Unai Simon, who plays his football for Athletic Club, has risen up to essentially grab the number one jersey himself. He's been excellent for his club team this season. And Enrique, again, another example of him backing himself in these decisions. Simon now looks set to be starting for Spain in the European Championships, despite the fact that obviously De Gea and Kepa are maybe of a higher profile, but as it stands, Simon is the goalkeeper in form.
Definitely. I think, you know, he's the youngest of those three. He's a player with a lot of potential, a lot of ability, a good character as well. Very kind of together in many ways, very consistent. Now, I think his form has maybe dipped a little bit in the last few months. I think he's made a couple of mistakes. He's not been as strong as he was before he got the call-up, ironically, but I still think he's the best option. I think he definitely will be the number one goalkeeper this summer. I think Luis Enrique said recently that he doesn't have a number one goalkeeper in terms of a clear, undisputed starter. And that's definitely the case. I think that, you know, there's room in the future for someone else to come in and claim that shirt. But I think undoubtedly Unai Simon has that right now. He has Luis Enrique's trust. And he has had a good season overall with the Athletic Club. And also of the three, he's the only one to play in Spain. I mean, the other two are in England and neither of them are starters for their clubs. Mm. And I think that if you're going to be starting for an international team in a major tournament, especially one as high profile as Spain, you have to be playing week in, week out, you know. And Unai Simon has that, Kepa doesn't, neither does De Gea. So I think it's a no-brainer. I think that the goalkeeper position is pretty much nailed on this summer.
Looking further forward and into defence, Sergio Ramos has had his injury issues in the final few weeks of Real Madrid's season, and we know that obviously his contract situation at the club is still under threat, and there's the potential that he might leave or he might shock us slash not shock us and sign a new contract to extend his stay in Madrid. But if he has to go out on crutches, he'll be playing for Spain. So I think it's his place is earmarked completely, probably more than anybody else in the squad for a starting position. But the interesting one is who will partner him. Pau Torres has been the front runner in the last 12 months. Enrique does like him. He's impressed with Villarreal and been linked possibly with a move away with Premier League teams supposedly interested in him. But Aymeric Laporte is the favourite as it stands. Bit of a shock prior to the squad being announced that Laporte has said he's had enough of waiting for Didier Deschamps to bring him into the French team. He's now declared for Spain. And we've seen a little bit of a pattern with certain squad selections. France bringing Karim Benzema back in from the cold. Germany obviously recalling Mats Hummels and Thomas Müller to their squad. That managers are looking at this in an incredibly pragmatic way of get me the best players in the squad and let me get them out on the pitch. But Laporte, for all of his talents, hasn't been first choice for Manchester City this season. John Stones and Ruben Diaz have been the two for Pep Guardiola, particularly since the turn of the year. But a left-footed option alongside Ramos, with the talent of Laporte and the experience, looks to be a really, really interesting partnership. And based on the way that they both play, we know that Ramos likes the physical side of it, so does Laporte, but Laporte likes to step out with the ball. They could work really, really well together. And Spain haven't really sourced a long-term replacement for Gerard Piqué following his retirement. Could Laporte be that option?
Yeah, it's an interesting one because, like, Luis Enrique has spoken of Pau Torres in really affectionate terms in the past. You know, he really, really likes him. I think he's really brought him along. And it's definitely almost cruel if he were to have his tournament robbed from him just as it begins, you know, after playing so well throughout the whole qualification campaign. And it's funny because, like, I mean, Sergio Ramos, yes, I think he'll do everything he can to be in that squad. And I would be amazed if he wasn't in the squad. But part of me is wondering if the delay to Monday, was supposed to be announced today, the squad, is almost partly down to him, because I think he's such an important figure for the team. But he's only played two international games since January 14th and three La Liga games since January 14th. That's three Madrid games since January 13th. So, you know, his fitness is definitely not up there. And his form isn't either. And, like, I don't know, part of me is wondering, you know, could he... We already mentioned how Luis Enrique is so kind of rigid to his own beliefs. Could he actually make the big call and put the tournament above Ramos and actually start maybe a double starting centre-back partnership of Pau Torres and Aymeric Laporte? I think that's not beyond the realms of possibility. I think it's more likely that Ramos will start, but I think that could happen as well. Because, I mean, as you know, Ramos wants to play at Qatar 2022. He wants to play in the US and Mexico in 2026 as he wants to retire. So I think, you know, like you said, he'd get there if he's on crutches. But I wouldn't be surprised if there was a spanner in the works in many ways. Regarding a centre-back partnership, I mean, I'm surprised as well because I kind of had taken for granted that it was going to be Pau Torres and Eric Garcia moving forward. That was going to be the centre-back partnership that would take place after Ramos moved on or took a more backseat role. Whereas now I think Laporte's inclusion has definitely changed things a bit. I think that Ramos and Laporte would be a much better partnership than Torres and Laporte. So I do think that if Ramos is fit, he'll start, and it would be one or the other. And I'd imagine if Laporte is declared and he's gone through that process, he would have made guarantees, I would say. And I'd imagine he would start. He's more senior than Torres. He's probably more consistent as well, even though the season's been tough for him. But I think that Luis Enrique's relationship with Pep Guardiola, the knowledge of the football that Laporte is playing at Man City, and how close that is linked to the Barcelona identity, the Spanish identity, I think that he'd fit in quite seamlessly. And as you mentioned, I think he'd be a very, very good complement to Ramos if that's the centre-back partnership.
In terms of midfield, there's still there's a big Barcelona flavour running through it. Sergio Busquets is expected to start in his usual number six role. Atletico Madrid captain Koke alongside him. But the big excitement is around Pedri, who's taken La Liga by absolute storm this season. 37 La Liga appearances. Ronald Koeman's given him the weekend off for the final game of the season. He's played more games than Lionel Messi and Antoine Griezmann for La Blaugrana this season. And he's an absolutely exceptional talent. We're so used to players coming through Barcelona that are almost identical to him. He hasn't come through the youth system that brought him in from Las Palmas. But he's such an incredibly intelligent footballer for such a young age that Koeman has had no choice but to make him a first-team regular immediately from the get-go so far this campaign. And he is someone that we talk about Phil Foden for England, who's had an incredible domestic season with Manchester City, and England fans will be expecting him to bring that form for them in the tournament. But Pedri arguably looks better than any other young player going into this competition.
Definitely. I think no other young player, I think it's actually an official stat that no player has played as many minutes as an 18-year-old for their club this season. I think Bayoko Saka is up there as well. But in terms of his consistency, it's been remarkable. I mean, I remember those games where he was running back to chase the last ball and clattering into the post to save a goal. You know, like, he's very much a competitor as well as a footballer. And he's a remarkable player. I think Ronald Koeman was observing a training session. The plan was for him to go on loan this season. And Koeman said, no, this guy's coming with us. He's too good to be on loan. And it's proven so. He's been so consistent for Barcelona. I think he's played too much. I think he's run to the ground a bit. And that's my one worry with him, is that maybe he could be a bit fatigued coming to the tournament because he is so young. In the last few weeks, he has looked quite tired, I think, personally. But then there's other options in the squad that can take the weight off him if that's the case. You know, you've Marcus Llorente, who's in phenomenal form for Man City, for Atletico Madrid this season. You have Sergio Canales as well, who's in very, very good form for Real Betis. So there's options that could take the weight off him. And also, you know, being beside Busquets in that midfield is almost like having a your dad next to you in many ways, you know, kind of guiding you through games when he is tired and when he has to learn how to conserve his energy. But I think, you know, Phil Foden is a phenomenal player. I think he's very advanced. He's more like a, you know, kind of a roaming 10 or something. I think Pedri is much more of a central midfielder. And he deals with all the problems that comes with. It comes with more running. It comes with more defensive responsibility. It comes with more tactical necessity. But he's responded to all of that. And I think he's a really, really exciting talent. And I think that there's definitely no central midfielder in the tournament like him this summer, especially not given the responsibility of playing an integral role in one of the biggest, historically one of the biggest nations in Europe, you know. So I'm very, very excited to see how he does this summer. I think it could be a breakthrough summer for him. And I hope that he's fresh enough going into it to show the rest of Europe how good he really is, because he's a real talent, as you said.
The perennial question seems to be with Spain ahead of the tournament. Do they need a number nine? Do they need a centre forward in the mould of Fernando Torres and David Villa, who we saw spearheaded Spain to success in that little period between 2008 and 2012? But this time round, they don't have someone of maybe the European appeal of a Torres or a Villa. Gerard Moreno at Villarreal is the leading light at the moment. He's been absolutely red hot for Unai Emery's team this season. And the way that Enrique plays lends himself more to Moreno being the main man, which probably means that Alvaro Morata is going to miss out. But there are options. And what I wanted to ask is, based on the way Spain have played under Enrique so far, is it likely to be a nine in the traditional sense of Moreno playing through the middle with two wide players, or something a little bit more unorthodox? We saw at Manchester City this season with Ferran Torres playing as part of a three. He's in the squad as well. That they could maybe have something a little bit more fluid, maybe Mikel Oyarzabal playing through the middle, Marcus Llorente, who you mentioned has been phenomenal for Atletico Madrid. Enrique needs to find a place for him in the team. Is there a need for a nine if there's maybe doubts about Moreno, particularly in some of the big, big games?
Yeah, well, I mean, listen, like, Moreno hasn't been trusted by Luis Enrique so far in his reign. And I think the season has been a breakthrough season in many ways. I mean, like, Moreno's 27 years old. He's not a young fella anymore, but 23 goals this year, 6 assists. He's been the top scoring Spaniard in La Liga this season. He's definitely within a shout for the starting 11. I think it's an interesting dilemma you mentioned, because Luis Enrique has been loyal to Alvaro Morata. And while he hasn't set the world on fire, he has been an important player in his teams, especially against Germany in that 6-0 victory. So I wouldn't be surprised if Morata did start as kind of a reference to play off of and to create space and disrupt the defence. And then you had maybe Ferran Torres on one flank and Gerard Moreno on the other. Because I think Moreno has often played there when Villarreal have switched to a 4-3-3 this season, because Paco Alcacer is the main kind of striker and then Moreno can play off him. I'm not entirely sure if Luis Enrique has the faith that they could play that system you mentioned, the City system, because one stick to beat them with has been their lack of goals. That's been rectified recently, but I think sometimes they've reverted to that kind of pass-to-death mentality that's kind of, hamstrung Spain sometimes, aside from their title-winning tournaments. So I think that, that could be an experiment, but I would expect him to continue with that main number nine striker and incorporate Moreno into that system, as opposed to using Moreno as a starting striker, because I think that could be a bit of a risk, especially given how historically defensive international football is. And also you have to remember that Gerard Moreno is playing against teams who are playing against Villarreal. So typically he'll have more space playing for them than he would for Spain, because when you're Slovakia or Sweden or Poland defending against Spain, you're going to be defending deep. You're going to be cutting off spaces. Moreno won't have the same space to operate that he does with Villarreal, that you do with a mid-table or slightly better than mid-table team. So I think that could be a challenge for him. But yeah, it's very, very interesting. I think it's a good problem to have. My expectation would be Morata as a central kind of reference, with Ferran Torres and Moreno as kind of strikers, because Ferran Torres has been playing almost a striker this season for Man City in many ways too. I mean, his hat-trick the other day against Newcastle, I think it was, he was playing almost a striker. So I think it could be a very fluid system, but I expect there to remain a kind of central reference one. I think that Luis Enrique likes that in his teams.
Sweden, Poland and Slovakia. Sweden, Spain faced in qualifying and got past them. They won't hold any major surprises for them. Poland, we know Robert Lewandowski is going to be absolutely key for them, and Slovakia needed a battling performance in the playoffs to get themselves into the tournament. And if Spain top this group and the knockout draws are kind to them, you can plot a very feasible path through to the final. And based on Spain's previous experience, if you go back to 2012, that's not that much of a big call to make. But since 2012, we've seen so many of those players retire from international football and new players come in and not quite hit those levels. There does seem to be a feeling this time that something has to change. It's been too long for Spain to be this far away from where they were before. And based on that, based on the return of Enrique, where do you think Spain can go this summer?
Well, I think the group is interesting because, I mean, Sweden are obviously without Zlatan. That's been a recent development, that he's not going to be going to the Euros. He's going to be focusing on recovering for Milan next season. But they do have Alexander Isak, who's played very well for Real Sociedad this season. And also, of course, Poland have Lewandowski, one of the best strikers in the world, if not the best striker in the world. Slovakia, I think, will obviously be the fourth horse in that race. I think they've done well to get there, but I wouldn't expect them to do much damage at the tournament. Regarding Spain's projection, I think that, like I mentioned earlier, that kind of generation divide where you had this remarkable success of players in 2008 to 2012. I think coming in after that when you're Thiago or Isco or David De Gea, it's very difficult to step up and fulfill that objective because it's a tall shadow to try and live in, if it makes sense. Whereas now, because they have that bit of breathing space between them, that success is recent enough. It's in their muscle memory, it's in their history, but it's not in the recent history. It's a decade ago almost now, you know. I think that space has given them time to breathe and time to kind of recalibrate and reassert. They still have that experience there with the likes of Ramos, with the likes of, Jordi Alba could be in the squad as well, could be starting ahead of José Luis Gaya, given the way he's played the season. But I think that, you know, the youthful exuberance brought about by Pedri, brought about by Marcos Llorente, even though he's 25, I think he's almost like a youngster because he's not played that much football. Ferran Torres, you know, players like Gerard Moreno and Sergio Canales who are coming into the squad late in life with a kind of a renewed appreciation for it. I think that balance, led by a man as assertive and as kind of sure of himself as Luis Enrique, means they could be a serious threat. And I would put them as dark horses in the competition, to be honest with you. I think that Portugal are strong, so are France. I think France are a team to beat. You know, we've all seen their squad. But yeah, I'd have optimism that Spain can go very, very far in this competition for sure.
Well-placed optimism as well. I can't wait to see Luis Enrique in charge at a major tournament. Alan, thanks so much for your time.
No worries, Fergal. Thanks for having me on. Really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. Up next, we're going to be previewing Sweden with Alex Johnson. She's going to be talking to us about the Zlatan-less Swedes. We'll catch you in just a second. Hello and welcome back to the Squawker Talker Euro 2020 Group E Preview Podcast. Next up, we are looking at Sweden, and I'm joined by Swedish journalist based in Spain, Alex Johnson, to talk about Sweden and their chances ahead of the tournament. Janne Andersson has announced his squad in the last 24 hours. Most of the names that are involved are to be expected, but before we talk about the players that have been included, the 26 names, the big story, as so often is the case with Swedish international football, is a man that has not been included. Zlatan Ibrahimovic announced that he would be making himself available for national team duty this summer. However, a knee injury has ruled him out, so Zlatan will not be going to the Euros. Alex, from the outside looking in, Zlatan is a world-class player with an incredible CV at club level, absolutely fantastic almost everywhere that he has gone. Perceptions in Sweden have changed surrounding him in the last few years, and particularly since his retirement, there's been a move away from Zlatan Sweden to just Sweden. So I suppose the big question is, if he had been fit and had been selected by Andersson for the tournament, would it have been a positive or a negative?
That is the big question. I think one of the keys would have been Janne Andersson, to be honest. I think he's a coach who would be able to get Zlatan to become a positive. If we look at the last time Zlatan was in the national team, the coach was Erik Hamrén, who was basically someone who didn't have any authority in the team whatsoever. So it became the Zlatan show where Zlatan decided everything. I think that is something that Janne Andersson would never allow to happen. And I think Janne went to Milan to have a meeting with Zlatan before they decided that he would return to the national team. And I think in that meeting, I think both of them kind of made it very clear to each other how it would work and the role that Zlatan would have in the team. So I think that would have been a key into why it potentially could actually have been a positive. Whilst I think if you look back at 2016, having Zlatan in the team was actually a negative, and getting him out of it ahead of Russia and how Sweden did there was a positive. But I do think that going into this Euro, it in the end, it is very likely that it could have ended up being a positive for Sweden, because he's obviously an extraordinary player. And if you can get him integrated in the team in the right way, then you have amazing opportunities. But at the same time, putting Zlatan in there and him coming back, that is taking a spot from one of the young guys from anyone in the future. And I think also in Sweden, I think Swedish fans have been very split. There's been a lot of discussions every time there's been the smallest talk about Zlatan returning, if it's actually positive or negative. In Russia, we saw what Sweden's big strength there was, not the players. I think that was one of the worst teams that Sweden has had in my lifetime in terms of the quality of each player. But together they created such a unity, and it was all about the teamwork, which made them have such one of the most successful tournaments. I think it was the in over 20 years, the most successful World Cup for Sweden. So that is something that gets a bit messed up when you put in Zlatan into the equation. But at this, so that has been dividing Swedes. Is it good to have him there? Is it bad to have him there? I think it's the same case when you talk about Ronaldo in Portugal or Lionel Messi in Argentina. When you have a player who's so much better than everyone else, it is difficult to not make it all about him. But at the same time, then you might have players, we've seen that in friendlies with Sweden and things like that before he left the national team, where you had players who were like running around basically adoring that they were running next to Zlatan instead of thinking about themselves. And they would just pass the ball to him instead of thinking what's actually the best thing to do. I think we with the current players, that might not have happened as much as it did back then. But, you know, you have those problems as well. So it's a lot of things to think of. And there's a lot of pros and a lot of cons. And in the end, it's really difficult to say if it would be something that would benefit Sweden or not. But in the end, when it finally was said that he's actually returning, and this time it's not just him making some PR or something like that, this time it's actually for real and he is coming back, it created a lot of excitement in Sweden. And I think there was a lot of people who might have been on the side of not really wanting Zlatan back and kind of gotten over the entire Zlatan hype that was brought back a little bit in it as well. And now when it came out that he's actually missing it and he's injured, that kind of, in a way, put a shadow on the entire Euros for Swedish fans, and the excitement was brought down. And I think had Zlatan from the start not been a part of it, had we known from the start that Zlatan was not going to go, people would be extremely excited right now, because there is some very exciting young players in this team. And it feels like Sweden could do something pretty decent. But when you know that Zlatan was supposed to be there, that excitement is not as big anymore, because the excitement was even bigger when he was coming. So I think it's a lot of mixed feelings. And I think it's a lot of mixed opinions if it would be positive or negative. But in the end, I mean, if you're Jan Andersson, you have no choice if Zlatan says he wants to come back to the national team. And I do think, like I said at the start, that if there was any coach that would actually make Sweden benefit of it, it would probably be Jan Andersson, because he wouldn't agree to just anything. And I think he would make sure that Zlatan acted accordingly and worked within the team. So I think it would have been quite different from 2016 in that sense.
Anderson's message, as you say, before the 2018 World Cup, which Sweden got out of the group and into the last 16, would have been, we are more than Zlatan as a unit. You know, you mentioned that you look maybe on an individual basis, there was maybe a drop in talent in terms of the players that were involved. But as a team and as a force together, it was such a strong performance, and the strongest performance we've seen from Sweden in a World Cup for some time. And given the fact that we now know Zlatan isn't going, is Anderson's team talk in a way almost already done for him? He knows that so much of the pre-tournament talk would have been about Zlatan, that now he can look these 26 players in the face when they're gearing up for the tournament and say, it wasn't about Zlatan in 2018. It's not about him this time. It's about you guys. So go out and perform.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he's very good at that, because during his entire time as the national team coach, Zlatan obviously retired from the national team just before Jan Andersson took over. There's been so many questions and so much talk about Zlatan, because it always comes up around Sweden. And he has been really, really good at making it clear to everyone that he's not speaking about a player that is not there. He will only talk about the players he has. And that's why there was also people wondering, would Jan Andersson even allow Zlatan to come back to the national team? Because he had been so clear about that these are the players that are in my team, and if he wants to come back, then he will have to call me, basically, was what he said back then. And then we will have to take a discussion about it. He didn't even say that then he's in for sure. So, and I think just that kind of things is also important now when he was in and is out and all of this, because that makes these players know since before that for Jan Andersson, it has never been about only Zlatan. It has been about the team, and he's focused so much on them before as well. And going into this tournament, they've showed before that they can do so much without that player as well. So I don't think for the team it's going to create a problem, maybe only in the way that you have planned for how you're going to play tactically and things like that with him, and it's quite a difference to play without him. So that might affect them a little bit, but in the long run, it's a team that for a very, very long time has been without him. So I think they are almost more know how to play without him than they do how to play with him.
And looking at qualification for the European Championships, obviously delayed by 12 months, defence was a fairly key part of strategy from Anderson in order to get out of the group. A little bit of deja vu again, Spain again up against Sweden. They faced them in qualifying. Now they've got them in the tournament for real. And when you look at the record, less than one goal a game conceded during qualification. And we talked about Zlatan and obviously what he could have brought at the other end of the pitch. And we'll talk about some of the exciting players that Sweden have got in attack in just a moment. But they've got some real experience in defence, campaigners that you can rely on. Mikael Lustig, Victor Lindelof, Ludvig Augustinsson. These are players that on some level you might say are not the most fashionable and maybe not the most eye-catching, but they're solid, they're consistent, they're experienced, they won't give away silly goals. And given the fact that this is a difficult group, Spain are obviously well fancied to do well. Poland have one of the best strikers, if not the best striker in world football, in Robert Lewandowski. You need a backline that you can rely on.
Yeah, for sure. And it's something that Sweden has always needed and always kind of had, is just that they are a very solid defensively team. And when you come from a country as small as Sweden, you will not be able, if we exclude Zlatan in this far, to have those world-class players. And as what we were talking about before with the Russian World Cup, in terms of quality, the players that Sweden had at that tournament weren't that high. I think we have a little bit higher quality now, but it's not much. And that makes the unity of the team, which when we talk about the defense, it's also not only about the back four. It's about how the entire team defends and how they work for each other, which has been a big, big key for Sweden in the past. But it's definitely that's the philosophy I think Sweden is going to go into this tournament with, and which Sweden, to be fair, more or less always have, is that you have to be very solid defensively and quite defensive-minded if you're going to have a chance against these bigger nations. And if we look at big tournaments in the past, maybe more in the World Cup than in the Euros, but in the Euros as well, Sweden have managed to get out of really, really tough groups. And it's almost been when they've had the tougher group they've had, they've gone through. But when they have had easier groups, they might have not. And I think every time Sweden ends up in a group of death or something like that, they somehow end up winning the group. And just that confidence as well, and knowing that history when playing in big tournaments and when having difficult opponents, I think will help as well, because then you know it's not impossible, because this team, many of this team in Russia has done it, but Sweden historically as a nation has done it so many times.
Looking through the rest of the team, Sebastian Larsson is included. We know massively experienced and he's been around forever. There is obviously the potential this could be his last or one of his last international tournaments given his age, but Emil Forsberg is a really interesting option. We're going to try and reduce the Z word because he's not in the squad, but given the fact that the attack is probably going to be quite youthful now that the Z man is not, he who shall not be named is not included, Emil Forsberg has got an additional bit of responsibility. Back in 2016, he was kind of the young buck that everyone was looking forward to seeing how he would adapt and how he would perform. He's got 5 years of experience behind him now, and really impressive season again with Leipzig. Looks to be hitting exactly the same numbers across the last two or three seasons. He's going to be a really, really important player to link the entire Swedish team together.
Yeah, and if we look back at the 2018 World Cup, again, going into that tournament, Forsberg was seen as the big star because of this being a team that was so much about the unity, and there wasn't really anyone that was bigger. So Forsberg was kind of, if you had to point out the star player of the team that you're always forced ahead of a tournament basically to do, everyone pointed at Emil Forsberg, which ended up, I think, becoming too much for him, because it was too much pressure on him that he was supposed to be the one to deliver in every match. And in the end, he didn't have the best tournament. And I think the expectations and the pressure got to him a little bit too much. So that is going to be interesting to see now how much he has grown in the last 2 years. And in Bundesliga, he's obviously been incredible and he's had a fantastic season that he's coming from now. So there is going to be expectations on him again. But what might be positive for him is that he's not going to be so focused as maybe he was in Russia, because you have young players that are really exciting right now, like Alexander Isak, for example, Kulusevski, and so forth. So there is going to be talk about more players, I think, than it was in Russia, and maybe a little bit less only pressure on him, and that might actually benefit him as well to be able to have a good tournament. But for Sweden, it is really important that he plays well, because, as you say, he's kind of a link for all of it.
And looking at the attack, there is the potential for one of the youngest attacking units in the competition. As you mentioned, Alexander Isak, who's been excellent for Real Sociedad this season. Dejan Kulusevski has been brilliant for Juventus, despite the fact they've not obviously managed to defend their title in Italy. And then, not necessarily a surprise name for Sweden fans, but for anyone looking at this from the outside in, Jordan Larsson, Henrik Larsson's son, has been included. Anyone looking for an interesting subplot to the Sweden squad will definitely be keeping an eye on him. And maybe the chances of all three of them starting together might be a bit slim. Anderson maybe won't go with all of them from the get-go in the group. But from those three players, who do you think could be the key one that we'll see the most of?
I think definitely that's Alexander Isak. I think I'm not sure how much Kulusevski is, if he's going to be a starter from the beginning, and he's going to be playing in midfield and not the attack as well. He's included as a midfielder, but they only included four forwards, which also indicates that he potentially would play in the forward line as well. And when it comes to Jordan Larsson, when Zlatan was in the squad, that was basically Jordan Larsson's spot. But then, since then, Zlatan got injured. And while Zlatan got injured, Jordan Larsson has been incredible in Russia. So now there's actually quite a bit excitement that maybe he will get some playing time during the Euros and do quite well as well. So that would be really interesting to see. But I think what Janne will focus on to start with would be to play Alexander Isak and Marcus Berg, which Berg is someone who's been in the national team for a long time and is someone that Janne Andersson relies a lot on. And then Alexander Isak, I think, is the most exciting of the players because he's been completely extraordinary in Real Sociedad. He scored 16 goals in La Liga this season, which is equaling Zlatan's record as the Swede with most goals in one single season. He also scored 16 goals, I think, during last season, but over different tournaments. So at the age between 19 and he's turned 21 not too long ago, he's been scoring an insanely amount of goals in one of the biggest leagues in the world for a team that isn't a title contender, but is a team that's been doing extremely well, and a lot thanks to him as well. But it's a really, really good team in general. But in the Europa League, they won the Copa del Rey, last season's Copa del Rey, but they did have the final this season where he was the top scorer of the entire tournament. Adding that to the league where he's just getting better and better and better. And to play at the level that he is in the league that he is against the opponents he plays against. And also, again, Real Sociedad is on a very, very high level. And I think that team and that squad is on a lot of a higher level than most people realize if they don't actually watch Real Sociedad week in, week out. It's a very, very long time since Sweden had a talent like Alexander Isak. If we take, again, the one who shall not be named, but to name him again, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, because I was discussing this with someone the other day. When he was at the same age as Alexander Isak, he was struggling at Ajax. He scored 6 goals that season for Ajax and was thinking about moving back to Sweden. That same age, Alexander Isak is scoring 16 goals in La Liga. So for Swedes, that is really, really exciting. And that is a very, very special player. You just heard David Silva talk about him the other day as someone who's been playing with some of the most incredible attackers in the football world when he was playing at City and everywhere that he's been, and in the Spanish national team and so on. And he was rating Isak really, really highly and saying this is a kid who has an enormous potential, who's already playing on a very, very high level. He understands the movements extremely well. He finishes really well. He's good at passing, and he has so much more to give. So I think that is, for me, the biggest excitement of this team is Alexander Isak, and to see what he can do in a tournament. He hasn't really gotten that chance yet. So this is going to be the first time that he plays in a big tournament for Sweden. So I think that's where, at least for me, the absolute biggest excitement lies. And then Kulusevski is very interesting, but he's been going up and down a little bit. Sometimes he's fantastic, and then he struggles. So you don't really know exactly where you have him, and I'm not sure how much playing time he will get either. But I think it depends on how the tournament develops for Sweden. But there is a lot of excitement there for sure.
And in terms of the group, just looking at the situation, obviously we mentioned Spain before. Lewandowski and Poland will be a threat. Slovakia, a bit more of a scrappy road to qualification. But the last five European Championships, Sweden have only got out of the group on one occasion. But you look at the names in the group, and you look at, as you said, these players that you've mentioned that have the potential to really take the tournament by storm if everything clicks into gear. There's an opportunity for Sweden to get out of the group and make an impact further along. Given the fact that Anderson will have this kind of almost ideal balance of a very assured, very experienced defence, and then this young, exciting attack up top, do you think there's a chance for Sweden to really push on and do some damage?
I think there's definitely potential for it. It's difficult, as always, to predict in ahead of a tournament. And like you said before, it's a difficult group. It's not an easy group at all. But then again, from the past, we know that they can definitely do it. If we go back to the last time they qualified from a group stage in the Euros, it was in 2004. And then they qualified winners of the group, and the team that missed out was Italy, who 2 years later won the World Cup. So it's and in Russia, this team obviously had Germany knocked out in the group stage as well. So they can do it when it's, even if the opponents are difficult. And as you say, it's solid defensively. You have excitement in attack and all of that. So it's not impossible. And if you go through the group stage, it's a knockout tournament. Anything can happen. I mean, you probably shouldn't expect Sweden or demand Sweden to win the group or anything like that. But to have the expectation of going through the group, that I think that you can absolutely have that and then see how it goes. But it is difficult to know exactly at what level they are on, I think. Because I think we haven't really seen, for instance, what someone like Alexander Isak can do at his best in the Swedish national team. We haven't seen that yet. So it's we will have to see what happens, I think.
Brilliant stuff. And obviously, first game against Spain, June 14th. I'm sure you won't be feeling any pressure from your employers or your current country, I should say, to be back in Spain. I hope to see you in your Sweden shirt with pride. Alex, thanks so much for giving us your thoughts on Sweden.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff. And up next, we are previewing Slovakia to wrap up Group E. We'll catch you in just a second. Hello and welcome back to the Squawker Talker Euro 2020 Group E Preview Podcast. Next up is Poland, and we're chatting with Polish football journalist Ryan Hubbard, author of the book From Partition to Solidarity, the first 100 years of Polish football. Now, Poland, when we talk about Poland, inevitably we talk about Robert Lewandowski, but we're going to park him for the moment, push him to the back of this little segment, because it'd be massively unfair on Poland to just talk about Lewandowski. We're talking about a very experienced squad with some young talent dotted within there. And probably before we get onto the team and some of the selection decisions that are going to be made in the next few weeks, we need to talk about the managerial situation, because That's been the big story in Polish football at the start of 2021. Experienced boss Jerzy Brzęczek was sacked in January and replaced by what I'm calling the nomadic Paulo Sousa. That's probably been a little bit kind to him because he's never really stuck around at any job or been allowed to stick around at any job to establish much of a reputation. And given the fact that Brzęczek did such a solid job in qualifying, 8 wins from 10 games, very, very experienced, well-liked, well-known by the Polish supporters, he's now out of the position and Paulo Sousa has come in. Just 3 games in 2021, qualifying for the 2022 World Cup. It's kind of difficult to get a gauge on Paulo Sousa and what his plans are for the team. What's been the reaction so far and what are you expecting from Paulo Sousa's Poland?
First of all, I mean, you mentioned that Brzęczek was well-liked and that's probably stretching it a little bit. Yeah, I mean,
more than so.
I'm sure we will talk about a little bit about the qualifying performance later on. But yeah, I think it was quite a good thing for Polish fans to see him out of the door. As for Sousa, at the moment, we don't really know what to expect. He's only had 3 games in charge. We've had the 3-0 draw against Hungary, which was his first game, having only had just a couple of days with the team. We saw a 3-0 victory over Andorra, which was a very difficult game in the sense that the Andorrans parked the bus, didn't give the Poles a lot of space in attack, especially with the Poles playing 3 up front. But again, they did sneak through the victory. And then we had the 2-1 defeat at Wembley against England, which was a better performance by the Poles. But again, quite difficult to establish anything from. We had no Lewandowski, of course, who was out injured. But a much stronger performance and perhaps a bit more of an idea of how Poland might line up once Lewandowski is back.
As you say, this idea of not really having any idea about structure because it's a brand new boss 6-7 months before the start of the tournament. Do you think that based on the amount of experience Poland have in the squad, that'll negate the issue of a new manager coming in? If it was a less experienced boss that had taken charge and he was looking to make changes in personnel and in formation and the way that Poland play, but because there are so many experienced heads right the way through the setup, that's not going to have as much of a possible negative influence?
I mean, we hope so. I think the biggest thing with the previous boss, Jerzy Brzęczek, was there was a rift in the squad. There was definitely something not right within the squad. We saw, I think it was against Italy in the Nations League. Lewandowski was asked after the game what the tactics during the game actually were. And I think he stood there for about 8 or 9 seconds just in silence, unable to sort of answer the question. There have been lots of rumours and talk about a rift between Lewandowski and Brzęczek. I mean, whether this goes back even further, Brzęczek is actually the uncle of Jakub Błaszczykowski, who is obviously a Poland Dortmund legend. He former captain as well. And there was a bit of thing going back a few years now where Błaszczykowski was the captain, got injured, and Lewandowski took over the captaincy and has never relinquished it when Błaszczykowski came back. So there's always sort of these rumours flying around that it perhaps stems back to that. But there was definitely some sort of friction within the squad, and Lewandowski is the captain, obviously the sort of spokesman for the team. And I say spokesman, obviously silence for 9 seconds is not really speaking, but it did speak volumes as such. So with Brzęczek going out and a new coach coming in such as Sousa, who, okay, hasn't necessarily got the managerial experience. He's got a lot of past experience from different places, per se, but perhaps, like you say, he hasn't really stuck around in many jobs to sort of see a style or anything. But he's got his playing experience. And I think for a lot of players, I mean, he was a Dortmund. He won the Champions League with Dortmund, of course, famously, and players like Lewandowski, who did play for Dortmund, will, I suppose, in that sense, hold him in high regard. But he's a well-known name. And I think that's the sort of thing that a lot of the Polish team will hopefully cling on to and hopefully have that respect for him that will make things turn out differently to as they did under Brzęczek.
And in terms of the squad, he's relatively fortunate that certain positions almost pick themselves. And as I touched on before, this idea of an experienced base, Wojciech Szczęsny, Kamil Glik, Jan Bednarek are a fairly solid defensive trio that will look to keep clean sheets and look to give Poland a basis to build on. Peter Zielinski and Kamil Grzycki, who isn't really playing much at West Brom, but we've seen over the years the talent that he's got. Zielinski perpetually linked with a move to the Premier League or to some of the other major European leagues from Serie A. There is a strong structure there that's carried over from the previous tournament, from Euro 2016, that Sousa can work with and look to put his stamp on in certain areas.
He has a spine there. The spine is long established, as you mentioned. Szczęsny and even Fabianski, if that was the case, if Szczęsny was out injured. You've got, as you mentioned, Glik. You've also got Krychowiak in the middle of the park, who's been a stalwart of the team for a while, and he's sort of getting back on form as well now. And obviously Lewandowski. And the team, as you say, that spine picks itself, and then you supplement it with those players around it. And what's happening with Poland now, you are starting to see players establish themselves in those positions. Obviously, you've mentioned Zielinski, Bednarek. We're starting to see players sort of, you know, pick themselves for that team effectively. Grosicki was one, probably not so much now a first choice given his lack of playing time at West Brom. But there are other players coming through who can fill that void. You've got Mateusz Klich, who's in the centre of the park. On the wings, you've got Kamil Jóźwiak. You've got Jakub Moda, who's sort of, you know, you'd say he's becoming a shoo-in for that position. And of course, you've got Milik or Piontek, who would usually start alongside Lewandowski and can, you know, perform a fantastic job. So, like you say, when they have that spine, it's a massive help for Sousa. But the majority of the team is now picking itself, and it's really those fringe players who are the question marks.
Modi, you've touched on there, in terms of his performances for Brighton, he's been a bit part player, he's been eased into the team by Graham Potter, but what Seagulls fans have seen of him, they'll probably be impressed. He's powerful, he's good in the air, he's a threat for set pieces, comfortable on the ball and versatile. He can play centrally, as you said, he can play out wide. And when you look at this Poland squad and we talk about that spine and the solidity and players that you almost know what you're going to get from, what they do what it says on the tin, essentially. Having someone like Modda, who's a little bit of a throwback in terms of the way that he plays and the way that he looks to make himself a force in the penalty box, he could be a bit of an alternative option for Sousa.
Definitely. His goal against England proves how much of an impact he can make, especially on a big stage. Modder is obviously still very young, only just signed with Brighton, really. He'd established himself at Lech Poznan before that very well. And, you know, you watch Modder and he looks a lot older than he is. He physically, mentally, he's probably years ahead of... How old is he? You know, he's early 20s. He doesn't look like he's in his early 20s. He looks like he's been playing for a good decade. And those types of players are ones that Sousa will make use of. It gives that different option. Whether he starts or not, it depends. Like we say, we don't really know what system Sousa's going to employ. But he is that option. He is the one of the key players who we can look at on his bench and potentially make a difference.
Robert Lewandowski, we've delayed long enough. We're going to have to talk about him. And let's face it, we're absolutely delighted to talk about him because he is in absolutely sensational form for Bayern Munich so far this season. At the time of recording, he's equaled Gerd Müller's record of 40 goals in a Bundesliga season. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he'll probably break that between now and the end of the campaign. And it's been another ridiculous season for him. With Lewandowski, every year we think, no, this is it. He can't score more goals and he can't go up another gear and another level. And every year he makes us look like clueless. He makes us look absolutely clueless because he is just that good. And from an international perspective, he's now going into the tournament on the back of an incredible year in 2020, on the back of another fantastic season with Bayern. Is he the best number nine in world football? We look at Messi or Ronaldo and there's this constant debate of are they number nines in the truest form? But when we talk about just pure goal scoring, and Romelu Lukaku, Harry Kane will be in that mould that are going into this tournament, they're probably the closest equivalent. But based on his record, Lewandowski is better than any of them.
Yeah, you have to say that. You can't argue that point. He's by far and away the best player in world football at the moment. He would have won the Ballon d'Or last season, you know, if it had been given by a long way. The issue Poland have with Lewandowski is, does he do it on the international stage? And that's, for me, that's always a bit of a debate. I mean, you look at his goal scoring record. He's by far and away Poland's all time top greatest goal scorer. He passed Włodzimierz Lubanski a few years ago, and he's just continued on. But for me, it's not as clean cut as that. You look at some of the. We go back to Jerzy Dzenciak. Under Dzenciak, he didn't really perform. And I don't want to put that all down to him as well. Dzenciak's tactics were often frustrating, sort of didn't get him involved in the game as much as he could have been. And for that reason, you know, he probably didn't score as many goals as he could have done, you'd say. And that's been the case before for Poland. It was a few years ago before, I think we're talking around 2013, 2014. They went through a spell under their coach, Waldemar Fornalik. Again, it was a very similar situation where he couldn't get Lewandowski involved. And I think at the time I was saying to a lot of people, to anyone who listened, what's the point playing Lewandowski? Because if you're not getting him involved, then, you know, there's no point having him. He's a dead weight out there. And the hope is that under Sosa will have the ability to get the best out of him, like he played under Adam Nawalka, the coach who took Poland to the quarterfinals of the last Euros. Another thing with Lewandowski, you have to look, he hasn't done it too many times against bigger teams internationally. He scores a lot of goals against the likes of Andorra, against the likes of Georgia, against the likes of San Marino. And, you know, you obviously have to score in those games, and that's international football nowadays when you play so many games against smaller nations. But it's very rare that he's actually done it on a big stage. I think I can remember a couple of goals against Germany a few years ago. And I think he scored in the Euros against Portugal in the quarterfinals. But other than that, there's not too many occasions where he scored against bigger nations. And again, that's not all down to him. He needs the service to be able to score the goals. He can't do it all on his own. And that's probably something for the national team where he's been relied upon a little bit more. He's had to come deeper to get the ball. He's had to carry the team a little bit more. I'd use carry in that sense that, you know, it's not a one-man team. We're not saying that. But he's the focal point. He's the lead man. And he's not playing alongside players that he plays with for Bayern Munich, that he plays with week in, week out. And so it can sometimes be a very different Lewandowski, but it's potentially his last Euros. We may get, if Poland qualify, another Euros out of him. What we're talking, he's 33 now, so, you know, he'll be going into that 36. But as you mentioned, when is he going to stop? Because every year he does keep getting better and better. So in 3 years' time, yeah, you know, he could be scoring 50 goals a season. We really don't know.
But as you say, when you look at his record against certain countries and this idea of bigger games, bigger nations, Spain, Sweden and Slovakia in the group, you would look at Sweden and Slovakia and say that's an opportunity for him to fill his boots and potentially fill his golden boot for the tournament. We talked about Kane or Lukaku and the impact that they're expected to have, Griezmann or Kylian Mbappe for France. There's an opportunity in the group and then potentially in the knockout stages for Lewandowski to be the top scorer in this tournament based on his Bayern form and based on the group that these are teams you would be expecting Lewandowski to score against. Are you confident that he can just rack up these goals to get Poland out of the group?
I'm confident that he can, but a lot of it does depend on those players around him and establishing those sort of relationships and those sort of telepathic relationship that he has with his teammates at Bayern. The last World Cup was a perfect example. You know, he went into that on very good form as well and failed to score. So it's, like you say, it's potentially one of his last times, if not the last time, on a big international stage. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on him, I think. You go back and you look at some of the best players in Polish history. You look at your Kazimierz Dana and your Zbigniew Boniecks, who are the, you know, arguably the two greatest Polish players of all time. And the reason they are the two greatest Polish players of all time is because not only did they score goals or do their respective roles very well, they led the teams to, both led the teams to third place in the World Cup. And they're the two biggest, probably two biggest sporting achievements in Polish history. So Lewandowski, although he is, you arguably would have to say he's probably the greatest Polish footballer of all time, unless he does it on the national stage and unless he leads Poland to something, there's always going to be that argument of whether he's better than those two. And that is a lot of pressure, I think, to put on him.
Before we get onto predictions for Poland and where you think they're going to finish this summer, Arkadiusz Milik, who possibly will take some of that pressure off Lewandowski's shoulders this season. His situation at Napoli was very, very hairy last summer, where he wanted to leave. There was essentially a standoff between himself and the club, and it looked like it was all going in one direction, that he wouldn't be kicking a ball before this summer's tournament. But January loan move out of the club, he signed for Marseille, and that's reinvigorated him. He's back scoring goals again. And we know with Milik that he can be a bit of a confidence player. If he's in form and he's finding the back of the net, he's a massive asset to his club side, whoever that might be at the time, and obviously Poland. And given the fact there is going to be so much attention on Lewandowski, we now know that Krzysztof Piątek is possibly going to miss out due to injury. Milik is someone that can kind of come up on the outside and be a real threat for Sousa. And when there's all this attention placed on Lewandowski, Milik could be an ace up the sleeve.
Definitely so. Piątek being out is a massive miss. I think we saw against Andorra, and I think we would have seen against England, Poland play with potentially all three of them up front at the same time, which, you know, if you're a defender coming up against those three players, it must be a horrible feeling. So I think Piątek being out is a massive miss. But yes, Milik has a massive opportunity now. A lot of it will depend on how Sosa chooses to go, of course. A lot of coaches have opted to play with the one striker, with just Lewandowski up on his top, up on his own, and supplementing with the likes of Jóźwiak or Zieliński behind him, who, you know, try and provide him support that way. I think, I'm hoping Milik starts. I'm hoping Milik and Lewandowski can sort of forge a bit of a partnership. But he's a good option to have off the bench as well, late on. And like you say, now he's back playing regularly at Marseille. It's a massive, massive boost for him and Poland. There was a point where we thought perhaps he wouldn't even get in the Euro squad after being left out of the Napoli squad completely. So hopefully, fingers crossed, he can be back on his form and, you know, guide Poland to something special.
Right, prediction. Spain are obviously well fancied to probably, possibly win this group. Luis Enrique back in charge, and they're looking quite slick. But Sweden, Slovakia and Poland will then be in the scrap for second, or potentially one of the best third place spots, which will get Poland into the last 16. With Lewandowski and Milik leading at one end of the pitch and an experienced core at the back, you must be relatively confident of at least getting out of the group and then potentially making a bit of a splash in the knockouts.
You have to be confident. Yes, I go back to 2018. I was extremely confident then, before defeats against Colombia and Senegal. But yes, you have to be confident. I think it's going to be three very, very games. I think there's going to be potentially a terrible, woeful performance in there. There's probably going to be a good performance in there, and there's going to be a very scrappy performance in there in the three games. And it probably depends on which order those three games come in as to how Poland do. But you'd have to say, given that there is a potential for finishing third in the group and qualifying, you'd have to say that qualification from the group is not only a target, it's a must. If you finish bottom of the group, then you've had a terrible tournament. So teams have got to be aiming for at least that third spot. Get through. I think quarterfinals are a possibility. I really think quarterfinals are a possibility. Any more than that, I think it's a fantastic tournament, really. Quarterfinals should be the aim for me.
Very good. Cautious optimism, Ryan, we'll call that. Ryan, thanks so much for your input on Poland. We look forward to watching them this summer.
And thank you for having me.
Go Great stuff. Up next in our Group E preview podcast, we're going to be talking to Lukas Vrablic, and he's going to be talking Slovakia and building up their chances ahead of Euro 2020. We'll catch you in a second. Hello and welcome back to the Squawker Talker Euro 2020 Group E preview podcast. We're wrapping up Group E with Slovakia in and amongst Spain, Poland and Sweden for the tournament. Stefan Tarkovic's side battled through qualifying, two playoff wins, beating the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. I'm joined by Slovakian journalist Lukas Vrablic to preview Slovakia and assess their chances for the tournament. Tarkovic's situation is quite an interesting one because he actually came into the job in between the two playoff games between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And from the outside looking in, that's a strange decision to make between two such important games. It's paid off for Slovakia. They've beaten Northern Ireland to qualify. How has that decision gone down with the Slovakian fans? Is it seen as the right move to make to bring Tarkovic up from the coaching setup? And has he been a success so far?
Yeah, it was a strange decision by Slovakian FA. Because the qualification for the Euros wasn't really successful. They didn't get to the Euros through normal qualification, so they needed another chance through the playoff. And after the semifinal, which was won after penalties against Ireland, they just decided to sack the coach. So it was kind of crazy, with getting the victory in your most important game and then get fired. So nobody really expected that. What was important, Pavel Hapal, the previous coach, needed to do kind of generation change, which he basically started. For example, players like Martin Škrtel, the defender from Liverpool, retired from the national team, and it was the case with some other position as well. So they needed to do generation change, and the results were not really good in that qualification. They missed out, so yeah, there was some pressure. But generally speaking, it was kind of expected that Pavel Hapa would finish the campaign also with the final of the playoff in Northern Ireland. And then they would see what would happen. But yeah, the Slovakian FA decided to change him for Štefan Tarkovic. Now, Tarkovic is the former assistant of Jan Kozák, the national team coach who led Slovakia to Euros last time. So he basically knows the atmosphere around the team and the players. So it wasn't kind of getting somebody new before important game. He was just around the team because he also worked for FA as technical director. So they just shifted him to the main coach position. And it paid off that they beat Northern Ireland. But the start for the qualification to Qatar was quite bad. They drew against Cyprus and Malta. And then they won against Russia. So nobody really knows what's happening with Slovakia at the moment, to be honest. They seem to win when nobody expects it. And when everybody expects them to win, they cannot do it. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy. But it's going to be important for Tarkovic to get some results at the Euros as well, to get kind of good form into that team, and let's see if he stays. But the plan is now for him to basically lead or continue in that generation change. So that's the long-term target that will stay here also after the tournament.
And Slovakia were one of many European sides that were massively impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic in terms of restrictions over calling up players and squads being able to gather. And the back end of the Nations League campaign and the start of the World Cup qualification campaign that you've touched on has seen players not being available for selection, either not being released by their clubs or certain travel restrictions placed around it. So in order to try and gain a working picture of what Tarkovic has done in his early days as manager, it is difficult, but the results have not been bad. They've just not been massively impressive. But on the other hand, when there's needed to be a very disciplined performance to get over the line, he and the players have shown that.
Yeah, as I said, they are just unexpected team to play against. Nobody really can predict how they will play. Because as I say, probably they just feel good when they are outsiders a little bit, when they have kind of siege mentality. Because they got a lot of criticism after that, those two draws against Malta and Cyprus, because everybody expected 6 points from that. They got just two. And suddenly they had Russia at home, which was, along with Croatia, the favorite of the group, and they beat them. So they are just like, they seem to be able to stick together when it matters. So probably that will be the case at the final tournament as well. And yeah, for Tarkovic, it has been also quite difficult at the start of his national team career because, for example, his former chief, Jan Kozák, had a big luck in that that he had a good generation of the players and they were at the same time usually like healthy for and available for the games. And now at some point he just needed to do some improvisations in the lineup. So along with COVID as well. Clubs from German Bundesliga or Serie A had some problems to release the players, and Slovakia doesn't really have a big pool of players to choose from. So it's enough when Bundesliga players cannot come to Slovakia to play, and it's going to be a big problem. So yeah, it wasn't only about football for Tarkovic. He had to solve other issues like this with COVID, but that has been the case for some other teams in Eastern Europe as well. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge, but I think that probably this is basically kind of the peak of what Slovakia can do really realistically, because, I mean, for a country like Slovakia, it's not really realistic to get to every major tournament. We cannot really expect that. But probably this generation of the players so far isn't as good as the previous one.
And looking at Tarkovic's record so far, defence is important. 3 clean sheets from the last 5 games going into the tournament. And the key figure at the back is Milan Skriniar. He's coming in as a Serie A winner with Inter Milan. He's played a massive role for Antonio Conte's side this season. And with Slovakia in the group that they are, Robert Lewandowski up front for Poland. Spain have got some fantastic options right the way through the team that can score goals. No Zlatan for Sweden, but they still have some really, really capable strikers. Milan Skriniar, as a defender, as a leader, is going to be absolutely key to how Slovakia get on this summer.
Yeah, sure. He grew into that leader role over the last year, I would say. That was expected from him because as Martin Škrtel retired, at the same time, Škrtel's center back partner for more than 10 years, Jan Jurica, retired too. So basically they lost the center back partnership they had for 10 or 12 years. And suddenly Milan Skriniar ended, like they're basically alone in the starting lineup. So they needed to find a partner for him. They didn't manage to do that yet. They basically tried their like 3 or 4 other players who are coming in other games. They basically changed them among themselves. So for Skriniar, in that kind, it's more difficult because he doesn't really have a stable partner in there. But yeah, he had a great season at Inter, where basically he was a player on the margins of the lineup at the start of the season. But he grew into a role of leader of the defense and led Inter to Scudetto. For Conte, he has been great. So yeah, there is a big hope he can be vital for Slovakia as well. He's probably the biggest star along with Marek Hamšík at the moment. So it's important for Slovakia to have a world-class defender in there. Because as you say, also with especially Poland having Robert Lewandowski, who is going to be a threat for any defense, it will be important to defend against him. So without Milan Skriniar, that would be really difficult.
As important as Skriniar is at the back, Hamšík is arguably even more important in attack. And From an outside point of view, you look at Hamsik's record in Serie A during his time with Napoli. He's an absolute legend there. 408 goals in 520 appearances. It's so, so impressive. Second in the all-time list just behind Dries Mertens. And for Slovakia as well, all-time appearance maker and record goal scorer. He's been key for Slovakia for so many years. Euro 2016 gave him a chance to showcase what he can do on an international stage. We all remember that fantastic goal against Russia that he scored. But given the fact that his age is against him in terms of playing in international tournaments, he'll turn 34 in July. He made the move to come back to Europe, left Dailing Yifang in China to return, joined Swedish side IFK Gothenburg in May in order to get himself essentially ready for the tournament ahead because he knows he'll be so important for Slovakia. Are you confident that he can turn in a similar performance from Euro 2016?
Yeah, I feel so. Many people think of Euro 2020 for Marek Hamsik as a kind of his last dance, but I just feel that he's basically 30. He's going to be 34 now in July. But he has been just a full professional for all his career since he started as a teenager, and he has been really working hard for last month as well to get like into full match fitness. That was the case why he transferred from China to Sweden, which was unusual move, of course. But it has allowed him to get back on the pitch and so on. So yeah, he's going to be really important for Slovakia, and that has been the case since he started in the national team. I always say that it's kind of like he's the biggest strength of Slovakia for sure. But in the same sense, that's a big tactical weakness, because when you can stop Hamsik, without Hamsik, Slovakia cannot really create anything in the attack. They are really dependent on him because he has been the world-class player in that midfield, and everybody just naturally was used to waiting to what Marek Hamsik creates. So he has been really vital in that build-up in the combination. He has been example to young players. He helped them a lot. Every young player that came into the team praised Hamsik like for advising them. So yeah, he's just probably the best player we have had at least since the independence in the 90s. Even if we had a player at Real Madrid, Peter Dubowski. But he died like after 30, tragically. So Marek Hamsik just isn't only a legend in Slovakia, but also at Napoli, as you say, with his record and the passion of the fans for Hamsik was basically almost the same as for Diego Maradona in the 80s. So yeah, he's just a great guy on the pitch, like especially because also in Slovakia when he started the career, it was kind of mentality thing among Slovak fans that they probably didn't appreciate him as much. They feel he's overrated or something. That in Italy he was a big star already, but in Slovakia people were still skeptic if he's really that good. But I think that he proved everyone wrong. He's the best player we have had over the last 30 years at least. So it's going to be mission impossible to replace that guy. But as I say, he's just 34. So with his style of play, even if he loses some speed or something in the next years, I just feel that his game intelligence and creativity is just second to none. So he might play an important role for Slovakia for another 5 years or so.
Looking at the group, Spain, Sweden and Poland, it is demanding and it will be difficult to get out of. But Slovakia's two tournament appearances so far, the World Cup in 2010 and Euro 2016, they have got out of the group and reached the last 16. So it's a 100% strike rate so far. Third appearance in a major tournament this time round. Yes, this is a difficult group again, just as it was in Euro 2016. But with Skriniar coming in on the back of winning the league with Inter Milan, Hamsik, as you've said, that's made that move to Sweden to make sure that he's fit and ready. How confident are you of Slovakia's chances and where do you think they can finish this summer?
Yeah, there is some skepticism especially after those March draws. But I feel that they have a good chance to go through, even if those three sides are really really good. But I feel that Slovakia can get point from every game that they can win basically against anyone. They are really good when they can sit deep and go into counter attacks. They feel in that role really, really well. They have players for that. For example, Hamšík thrives the most when he has the space, and just with they have fast players on the wings. Also, the attackers are really good in counter attacks and getting forward quickly. So. They have more problems to play against a strong defense. So I can see them thriving against Spain, for example. They managed to beat Spain a few years ago. Of course, it was a different period in 2014 with basically other players, but the playing style of both sides hasn't changed that much. So. If they are strong in defense and can fight on the pitch, because that's important for Slovakia in their tournaments to just get a good fight in there. So I feel they can go to the next stage at least. They always manage to crawl through somehow. So yeah, for example, in South Africa at the World Cup, they couldn't beat New Zealand. They lost against Paraguay. And they had 1 point after two games. Nobody expected them to go through, and finally they eliminated Italy, who were world champions back then. Just somehow, when nobody expects them to win, they just go through. So I wouldn't be surprised to see another scenario like that at the Euros.
Fantastic stuff. Expect the unexpected when it comes to Slovakia. Lukáš, thanks for your time.
Thanks for inviting me on.
And that completes our Euro 2020 Group E preview podcast. Thanks for listening.